Hi there, hockey fans, and welcome back to RotoWire's signature NHL Hockey Pod podcast with Statsman and AJ. Friends, I'm Paul Bruno in Toronto, Ontario, and you can follow me at Statsman22. My co-host, as always, is AJ Scholes, a great follow at AJScholes24, based in Sun Prairie, Wisconsin, near RotoWire headquarters over in Madison. AJ, it's my pleasure to have you back again for a sixth year as my partner. This is my seventh year on the gig, and every year we go through four preseason pods, and things change even right up to opening night. We'll fix that with the first regular season pod, but this is our best look at the Central Division today. And what do you think about the makeup of this group? They welcome back a Canadian team, but otherwise Arizona shifts over, I guess, is the other bit of news.
Yeah, I mean, going to be a little bit different, but not too much with Arizona coming over. I mean, really, if I'm not to give away our end of the show, Paul, but if I'm one of the other teams in this division vying for a title, adding Arizona is not exactly a bad thing, if you will. So, but yeah, you know, another week closer to hockey. That's what I'm saying.
That's for sure. And, you know, you imply that there's extra games played within the division. It's not as skewed as it was last year with teams playing each other exclusively. And I was a little bit surprised to see that. I thought they'd do a little bit more games in division, but it's only like four or five games against each club the way I saw it at first. And they make sure that each club visits everyone else in the league. So I think that part is good as a fan. You get to see all the players come to your hometown, and you get to see your team visit all the other cities in the league. So it's pretty neat the way they got the situation set up. And I wonder if we'll see tweaks down the road. Any thoughts about that? Would you like to see more divisional play and sacrifice some of this?
I'm so torn. Like, yes, more divisional play sounds intriguing, you know, when you just put it that way. But I do like the fact that everybody plays everybody else, you know, and so you do get, you know, if you're every team gets at least a couple games against the bottom feeders in the league, and those in their own way become important games, right? Because you need to beat those teams. I was maybe a little surprised when the schedule came out that we didn't have kind of those back-to-backs that they used last year. I thought those would kind of stick around. I thought those were helpful. And, you know, you play a team two nights in a row, it's obviously going to create a little more bump in the second game, especially against those teams that you only maybe face, you know, one set of times a year. So I unless we're going to increase the schedule, I don't think I would want more divisional games, because I do like playing everybody. Now, if they want to play 92, 161 like baseball games a year, I'm all for that. But I'm not sure the Players Association would sign off on something like that.
They might not, AJ. But one thing that they are happy about is, I guess I just recalled that in the last few days, the league's second in command suggested, Bill Daly did, that the salary cap's going to go up $1 million next year. So that gives a tiny bit of extra wiggle room for teams managing their salary cap situations. And I think it's a note that maybe the revenues from the league are going to be rising again in the next little while, and maybe we'll see an annual bump in the salary cap to give clubs a little more flexibility down the road. I know it handcuffed the local club here that I cheer for and another couple of teams that were affected as well, and that caused a lot of off-season moves this year. Your thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, I think it's always good for it to increase a little bit. It's a sign of strength in the game, really, that the revenues are able to go up. So overall, it's good to see. Obviously, for teams that are hard up against the cap, you'd like it to go up a little bit more than just $1 million. But any sort of growth, especially coming out of what we did, I think is a good thing for the sport all around.
Very good. And with that, we will get into our second of the four preseason previews, focusing, as we said, on the Central Division: Arizona, Chicago, Colorado, Dallas, Minnesota, Nashville, St. Louis, and Winnipeg are the clubs we're going to be looking at today. And we remind you that we're going to be referencing the point totals from last year in a 56-game schedule and try to extrapolate with predictions on some of the players based on the full 82 that we expect them to play this season. So Let's take a look at the Arizona Coyotes, the forward line combinations. AJ, why don't you lead us through that, and I will pick apart your comments.
Sounds good, Paul. So, yeah, I mean, the biggest kind of news for Arizona in terms of the forward complement is no more Connor Garland. We talked about that last week with the trade away from Arizona, and they got some pieces back, but they're not exactly pieces that are going to have a big significant impact. So the top of the lineup looks pretty similar to what we've seen in the past. Clayton Keller, Nick Schmaltz, and Phil Kessel holding down a top line. Some younger guys in Larson Krause, Barrett Hayden, and Christian Fisher on the second group. And it's not the most dynamic top six, if I'm being completely honest here. Some other new guys that they added, Ryan Zingel joins them. He'll be on the left side of the third line. Looks like Johan Larson, but Jay Beagle could also be in the mix for that spot as well. And Dmitry Jaskin comes in from the KHL, really a return to the NHL for him after, you know, a couple seasons away. He's back with the Coyotes here. And then this is where we'll kind of see, you know, those buried contracts like the Antoine Roussel, the Louis Erickson, even Travis Boyd a little bit in here. These guys, even though Boyd wasn't part of that deal, but, you know, a couple of veteran guys that are just, honestly, it seems like just biding their time. So I'm not really impressed if I'm being totally honest with this forward group. Obviously, you know, Phil and Keller and even I'll throw in Christian Fisher. There's a couple spots when you're playing like DFS you might want to pick up. But because of the weakness of this group, I don't know that I'm even sold on taking some of these guys, at least not early in season long leagues, just because I'm not sure what their production can really be with kind of a weaker cast around them.
Yeah, to your point, you know, Phil Kessel was the leading point getter among the returnees here with 43 and 56 games, and he's another year older, and that heavy-duty off-season conditioning stint that he's known for can only do so much, I suppose. One less hot dog, I guess, is in the plans this off-season. So he'll be the guy that kind of carries the mail and the name recognition in terms of the offensive pieces here, and I could see him right around the 60-point plateau again. Schmaltz is going to be tasked with feeding him the puck. He's not known as a first-string center based on his career history, and that's one of the problems here that you allude to. They don't have that signature piece in the middle of the ice, but Schmaltz, a placeholder right now, logged 32 points last year. Keller is another guy who should be among the scoring leaders on this club and probably will be the most hyped and sought-after player in drafts that corresponds to an Arizona residence in this playing season. So that's where the value is. You imply that there's not much behind them. Look at the second line point totals. Lawson Krause, 13 points. Barrett Hayton, 3. Christian Fisher, 11. I mean, all three of them have been high draft picks recently, but none of them really materializing. New faces here that might factor in. Ryan Zingel had a couple of nice years in Ottawa and Florida. Now he finds himself in Arizona, and he'll be tasked with pushing some of these guys in the top six for playing time. And Dmitry Jaskin comes back from the KHL, where he accounted for 60 points in 59 games played last year. And he played in the NHL before that with St. Louis with some acclaim, but again, a depth forward there. And then it's Louis Erickson's contract was dumped here in a fortuitous trade for his former employers to finally rid themselves of that deal. Jay Beagle, also a big ticket on the fourth line, and Andrew Ladd in the mix, maybe if he can get around his injury woes. At this time, it doesn't look good in that regard. So there's a whole bunch of question marks, and to your point, AJ, a lot of underwhelming options up front, save for Kessel and Keller, in my opinion. Well, let's switch to the defense, where maybe there's a little more room for optimism in our review here. Jacob Chychrun, I think, is emerging as one of the better young scoring defensemen in hockey. He had 41 last year, and that was with Oliver Ekman-Larsson in the mix. Now it's his team to run, and the power play will run through him as well. And so I could see a bit of a spike in his numbers. Maybe he'll get to 50 points on the season if he continues to log a lot of ice time and be the power play linchpin here. He'll be pressed for that duty by Shane Gostisbehere, who's probably happy to get out of Philadelphia after his fortunes turned south following a career season a couple of years ago. he slumped only 20 points last year, but he will be probably the second best offensive option in the back end. The rest of the guys, Connor Timmins, Ilya Lyubushkin, Victor Soderstrom, and even Ben Hutton, none of them, and Anton Strelman, I'll throw in, none of those guys are really going to account for much in the way of offense from the back end, from my point of view. Do you agree or disagree with that assessment?
I don't see anything different here, Paul. I think it's all Chychrun at this point. And look, you talked about the D group as maybe a source of optimism. If I'm a Coyotes fan, my source of optimism is looking at the fact that after this season, there's 12 million in cap space from just Louis Erickson, Antoine Roussel, and Jay Beagle on expiring contracts. I mean, honestly, among their forward group, only three guys have deals beyond this season. And you look at their 2022 draft list, you've got three first rounders. One of them's conditional and could move. And then five second round picks. Like, this is where the optimism comes from this group. And I will tell you, it certainly doesn't come from the netminding tandem here. When you consider the fact that the guys entering the season as their 1-2 had a combined four wins last year. That's not a mistake. That wasn't a mistalk. Four wins. Carter Hutton, 1-10-1. Josef Kornar, 3-5-0. Both had goals against average above three last season. Like, it's not good back there. And this is really just like a bide your time situation. I mean, they have Dylan Genther, the player they selected ninth overall in last year's draft, in the 2021 draft. So he's somebody to maybe see about coming up in the future. They've got a couple of young goalies that they drafted that maybe could become something. But for the most part, this is a lost season for Arizona, in my opinion.
So we can maybe pencil them in as a non-playoff team from AJ's point of view. I'm going to go out on a limb and suggest that. I'm with you in this in terms of this tandem. For the longest time in this summer, they didn't have anybody signed up for next year, so they really reached into deep into the bottom of the barrel to get these two guys. Carter Hutton, you mentioned, had a dreadful year in Buffalo and lost his number one job, and they had no interest in getting him back in. And Coronar is an interesting guy. He toiled in San Jose last year, and there was some disarray there as well. But he's a younger guy, and maybe they can pin some hopes on him. I would like to see them give him more of a share of the net this year, but really, to your point, no big deal if they don't, because it's a season that they might be wishing they could just secretly jump ahead to the following year and look forward to the draft, which could be the highlight of their season entirely. The Chicago Blackhawks are the second club we're going to look at, AJ, and there's plenty more reason for optimism here, in both our opinions. One of them centers around the potential return of Jonathan Toews. He missed the entire last year with a mysterious ailment that impacted his physical self on and off the ice, and not too many details really came out about the whole thing. I don't know if it was a chronic fatigue situation or a rare muscular disorder, but maybe you can shed some more light on that than I have. But he is penciled in to come back, and if he does, I think he lines up on a second line here instead of taking the first line role, because I think Kirby Dach is a guy they're going to really pin their hopes on in that regard. He was drafted a couple of years ago and was injured part of last season as well, compiled only 10 points in only a handful of games. But he'll get the nod to start in the center of two very good scorers, one their signature player up front, Patrick Kane with 66, Alex DeBrincat 56. Those are good points in an 82-game schedule. These guys did it in 56 games, so you can expect that they might be able to do more than those numbers this season, all things being equal. Toews is not going to be slumming it in terms of the line mates that he gets either. Dominic Kubalik is a capable scorer. He got 38 points last year. I can see him getting about 50. And Dylan Strome is a guy that I've been high on since they drafted him, partner. He was drafted, I think, in the top three or four of his draft year and as a center. And I wonder if there's a twist of fate in the near future that puts him back in the middle of the ice. But for now, he's on the right wing on the second unit. And then beyond that, they have Tyler Johnson, who came over from Tampa when they were in their cap crunch in the offseason. They offloaded Johnson. I think that's a bit of a coup for Chicago. Henrik Borgstrom, a guy who played for Florida in the past, is back after a year in Finland. He got 21 points in the Finnish Elite League and 30 games played. Philip Kurashev will round out that unit. And the other guy that comes over from another team is Jujhar Khaira. He was signed in the offseason out of Edmonton and probably saw his role diminishing there in hopes that he can rehab his reputation and challenge for a top nine role. We got him penciled in the fourth line, and along with Brandon Hagel, they're two of the top guys that will threaten for ice time if they can get their act together this season.
Yeah, what I like about this group is, you know, there's really kind of two options. They have some flexibility here. You know, they can move Jonathan Toews back up to that top line where he's used to playing with Patrick Kane, and they can kind of go for a couple shifts, a couple games, whatever, with kind of all their eggs in one basket, if you will. But then they can move Toews into that second line center, flip him and Kirby Dach, and kind of spread things out a little bit. And Tyler Johnson, for his part, is no slouch and could set that up to be a pretty decent third scoring line, all things considered. So I actually really like the depth that Chicago has managed to put together here. You know, it's adding Jonathan Toews, effectively adding him after he missed all last season, is, you know, a big get for them, really. I mean, think about that. If any other team had added a player of his caliber, you'd be certainly talking about it in the offseason. So I like what they've done to kind of tweak around the edges of, if you will, of their, you know, their top nine here and kind of try and find some things that work. There's a couple of guys that, you know, are right now, I would say, on the outside looking in or bottom six, but they could put their name in the mix for a bigger role, and that's Adam Gaudette at center and Alex Nylander. I think both those guys are somebody to watch and maybe see if they can play a bigger role heading into the season. They did more heavily revamp the defensive pairs here when you consider they brought in Seth Jones, made a big move to first acquire him in a trade that, you know, did see them give up Adam Boqvist and some draft picks. I think there are certainly some questions about whether or not that was the right choice, given Seth Jones significantly further along in his career than Boqvist. But the fact of the matter is he's here now and signed a big contract extension with them, an 8-year, $76 million deal. So he's going to be here for a while. And he'll man that top pairing alongside Calvin DeHaan. For the second group, they also brought in Jake McCabe. He'll play with Connor Murphy. I think McCabe could be another player to kind of keep an eye on. You know, his numbers have been, you know, middling at best. I don't think he's going to be like a huge producer, but this is a guy that's played in Buffalo for his entire career, and Buffalo hasn't been very good. I think if given the opportunity, he could maybe surpass his 20 points that he put up in 16-17. That's the best mark of his career. I think he could go for 30 points with, you know, a better team around him. And then the final pairing here, another new addition in Caleb Jones, who was brought in as part of that Duncan Keith move. And he'll Wyatt Kalinic is the player that he's projected to play with. We'll see if Kalinic's ready to make, you know, really the big jump. He did get 21 games last year, but now I think they're going to ask him to be kind of a full-time NHL player. So it's a very different looking defensive group than what we kind of got used to over the years here with Chicago, especially with Duncan Keith not being around anymore. But they've replaced him with a very capable player in Seth Jones, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think he's going to be the top defenseman drafted out of fantasy hockey pools when they look at the Chicago club. He got 28 points last year in a year where he was troubled with his time in his last year in Columbus. I think he's going to eclipse that very quickly this season, and he might even be able to double that total this season. That's what I'm forecasting. Jake McCabe looks to me, along with Connor Murphy, as the two other guys with an offensive capability on the back end. I'm curious to see how well McCabe does. I've got him penciled in somewhere between 30 and 35 points, and ditto for Connor Murphy. So I do think there are some offensive options on the back end, AJ, to look forward to. I can't wait to see what you're expecting out of the goalie tandem here with your guy Marc-Andre Fleury suiting up. He looks good in the Chicago colors. I think it's one of the best jerseys in the league, and Fleury comes in as the defending Vezina Trophy winning goalie in the NHL with a 26-10-1, 10-0 mark, 198 goals against average, sparkling numbers for the veteran NHL goalie. And I think he's going to find himself in a very good situation here, mentoring Kevin Lankinen, who's got to be thrilled to be working with Fleury. Lankinen himself came in with a bit of a splash last year, playing in 36 decisions, 17-14-5 was the record of 3.01 goals against. And he's going to be learning from one of the best communicators in hockey, in Fleury. I think he couldn't ask for a better partner. And I'm curious to see this goalie split in terms of games played. I could see it almost being 47-35 kind of a split in favor of Fleury. And I wonder how you feel about that and Fleury in the Chicago colors this season.
Well, I think Fleury looks terrible in any jersey that's not a Penguins jersey, but that's beside the point, Paul. We talked about this a little bit last week when we talked about Vegas. Like, the fact of the matter is, this was the guy that was named perceived as the best goalie in hockey last year, right? He wins the Vezina Trophy based on his numbers. And I think there's nobody in Chicago that would argue that netminding was the worst part of that team last year. You know, you've got three guys that all took parts of the season. Lankinen had the bulk of the workload, but he had the best save percentage at .909. Also the best goals against average at 3.01. Like, those were the best numbers that Chicago goalies could put up last year, and they're not good. So I think the fact that they went out, addressed, you know, really the number one need I think this team had heading into the season, it sets them up well. You know, we've talked about this now, you know, Jonathan Toews being a huge, you know, add for them, quote unquote. Seth Jones, a big add when you trade him out for Duncan Keith. And then Marc-Andre Fleury, like, literally at all three spots, they've added a really big name player. And I think it's going to make Chicago, you know, a real contender here heading into the season. And I think it was a risky move when you consider the fact that, you know, Fleury, as soon as it happened, was like, I'm not sure I'm going to play. Like, you know, it's a bit of a, again, they didn't give up anything for it. So, you know, there is that factor there. But to, you know, try and go out and get a guy, it's a big swing. And I think something that Chicago definitely needed. I'll lead us off into our next club here, Colorado. Really, this is a team that did not make really any significant tweaks to the forward complement here, or really the D complement. We'll get into that a little bit, but the top line is the top line here, and that's Gabriel Landeskog, Nathan MacKinnon, and Mikko Rantanen. I mean, I guess if you want to talk about, like, their big move, quote unquote, it's the fact that they re-signed Landeskog to an 8-year deal worth $56 million, you know, to lock up a 28-year-old on an 8-year deal is probably going to be, you know, maybe the rest of his career, maybe not if he, you know, goes long here. But so they've got that top line locked in and ready to go. And really, there's no reason why I mess with a good thing. So I certainly understand why that was a big priority for them heading in to the offseason here. The second line is, again, a group that we're used to seeing. JT Compher, Nazem Kadri, Andrei Burakovsky. Burakovsky led that group with 44 points. I think it was, you know, really maybe one of the first times that we've seen him kind of show what he can do. I guess, you know, the last 2 years in Colorado, he's hit that 44, 45 mark. And I think that's indicative of the more responsibilities he's getting since leaving Washington. Hasn't had a chance to play a full season with Colorado, both of his years cut short. So I think with 82 games, you know, barring injury, looking at maybe a 60-point guy here, and that's no slouch for a second line. Third line, again, more guys, Alex Newhook, Tyson Yost, Valeri Nenushkin, all names that we're familiar with. I guess you could add, you know, Darren Helm as their kind of one tweak here. But at this point in his career, you know, Darren Helm's not exactly a big add. They're probably not bringing him in to be a 20, 30 point guy like he was in his early days in Detroit. So really, if you want to talk about tinkering around the edges, this is a team that I think most defines that.
Yeah, I think they were pretty well set in terms of the top six. Some may argue that they should have sought for an upgrade over JT Compher, who only accounted for 18 points. I think there's going to be a lot of pressure on Nazem Kadri, AJ. He's coming off a third playoff season where he was suspended. And he's got to show this club that he's going to play for them and not lose his mind again this season. He's got to really stick his nose to the grindstone and stay put. I think there's going to be a lot of eyes watching him. You mentioned the top line. What are the point expectations for a guy like McKinnon? I think he could be top three at worst in the NHL in scoring. That's how good a player I think he is. And he's in contention for the Hart Trophy as well as the Art Ross as we look forward to dropping the puck. Mikko Rantanen, one of Mikko Rantanen and Gabriel Landeskog could even threaten the top 10 as well. And my money would be on Rantanen in that regard based on the fact he actually outscored McKinnon last season. That gives me reason to kind of lean in his direction in that regard, but Gabriel Landeskog would not be a bad option to pick up in the upper or mid rounds if he falls that far. I don't think he should. He's a quality player, the captain of this team, and part of this top line, which might be the best one in hockey outside of, well, I'll say it, they're probably going to be better than the Boston line this year, which is getting a little long in the tooth. We'll get to them in a couple of weeks. So I think question mark is on Compher and Kadri on the second line. I like your comment on Burakovsky, but he's going to need his mates to do their part to get to that 60-point plateau that you project. I don't think it's outlandish at all. And the rest of the guys, very much placeholders. Nichushkin had 21 points last year. I've been waiting on this guy to explode, but I think the fuse has expired there. He's going to toil as a third or fourth liner the rest of the way. I think he's run out of chances as a first line or second line player. The defense pairings, AJ, what say you about this group?
Well, I think you've got three really key big point producers here that we've seen. Again, it's all the same guys that we're used to seeing. Devin Taves and Cale Makar in the top group. Both of them will get power play opportunities. Both of them will have chances to rack up points. And Samuel Girard, for his part, no slouch either. 32 points for him last year. I don't think it's outrageous to expect Makar to also be a guy that pushes for 60 and for Taves and Girard to each be in the mix for, you know, upper 40s, maybe even 50. I think the big question mark here is what you're going to get out of Erik Johnsson. The fact that, you know, he played just four games last year, really was, has been dealing with some health issues of his own. And can he get back to being kind of that shutdown guy that can pair up with Samuel Girard? I like that pairing if it's possible. I don't know if it is. Owen Byram, another player that could offer, you know, fantasy upside depending on, you know, what sort of role he gets. He's only 20 years old and he's coming into a crowded group full of young guys that know how to compete. Ryan Murray will likely pair up with him. Curtis McDermott and Jack Johnson are both names. They could challenge maybe some of the, you know, a Bowen Byram to be a more like veteran presence, although I don't think either of them is going to offer any sort of fantasy impact. So for me, it's all about Makar, Taves, and Girard. But it's you know, from an Avs fan standpoint, it's pretty awesome to see three really top end like D scores lining up on that blue line.
Yeah, I wonder even in most drafts if Mikhail Makar might be the first defenseman that comes off the draft boards in season long play. He's that good a player and could threaten 60 plus points easily behind the offense that they have, and that can trot out a wicked power play as well. But you mentioned there's no slouches in the depth chart here. Devin Taves, 31 points last year. Samuel Girard, 32. Both capable of getting over 40, as you suggested, in an 82-game schedule. So there's reason to look at more than just the top guy in terms of name recognition in Makar. The goalie tandem is one that I'm intrigued by because Pavel Francouz was injured all of last season. They got Jonas Johansson from Buffalo in midseason. His record was 5-6-2, but they're pinning their hopes on Darcy Kemper to come over after posting a 10-11-3 mark and a 256 goals against average in a pretty tough situation in his last stop over in Arizona. He's going to have a much better team in front of him, and I think if he can stay healthy, he'll be one of the most important goalies in fantasy hockey this season, and I could see him playing up upwards of 50 games at least. And if he does that with the numbers that I project, he'll be among the top goalies in hockey. And he'll be a reason why Colorado's still one of the top teams in this loop.
Well, yeah, I mean, a lot of it is, you know, going to come down to Darcy Kuemper, because without, you know, if Darcy Kuemper struggles or, you know, has a down year, like, this is basically going to turn into Edmonton South, right? Like, ton of star players at the top of the lineup on both sides of the ice, but no goaltending. I really am very surprised, as we said last week, that they allowed Philip Grubauer to leave. Obviously, the cap is a consideration, but they brought in Darcy Kuemper, so there's $3.5 million. They've got 2.3 still available, and they could have, you know, gone without. I mean, let's be honest, they could have gone without signing Ryan Murray. That's $2 million there. You know, Curtis McDermott would save a little over $1 million there. So it's not like they didn't have the cap space to bring back Grubauer based on the deal he signed with Seattle. And so I really don't understand why they let that happen and get that far. I mean, I don't know, maybe there's something we don't know, and Grubauer didn't really want to come back. And so he was, only going to come back if he could get even more money from Colorado. But why you wouldn't want to play with this team, I won't really understand. So, I don't know whose fault it is that happened, but, you know, from my money, Darcy Kuemper is a drop, drop down the level from Philip Grubauer and where they were last year.
All right, let's move over to the Dallas Stars, AJ. And again, you talk about a team that didn't really do much tinkering on the forward lines. This is one team that fits that bill as well, but they need to be healthier. They had a lot of struggles with health among this group, foremost among them Tyler Seguin and Alexander Radulov. They're going to still be back and hopefully to start the season, and you can expect much bigger numbers out of them than the 2 and 12 that they got respectively. They're each going to be 60-plus, I would suggest. Maybe Seguin even hits the 70-point mark if he turns into the skilled player that he was before he was hurt much of last season. Jamie Benn will round out that unit, a familiar trio, but they have been lapped, I think, by a couple of younger guys in Jason Robertson and Rupe Hintz, who will flank Joe Pavelski, who I know is one of your favorites, AJ, to form what I think is the de facto first line here, and all three of these guys should be around the 60-point mark as well going forward. So it's a pretty nice six-pack at the top of the roster, and they even have some insurance in terms of quality behind them in Dennis Gurianov, Radek Faxon, and Joel Kiviranta, all three guys capable of moving up if they're needed. I'm particularly excited about Gurianov. I think this is a guy who would be a top six winger on most other teams, but there are a lot of good options here ahead of him in Dallas. They brought in Michael Raffel, who's been a top six guy earlier in his career, but he's fallen off that pace. And Luke Glendening is a veteran guy, probably a good penalty killer type that they have there. And Blake Como rounds out the 12 pack up front, in my opinion.
Yeah, I don't really see much else to add there, Paul. I agree. Health is the key. And, you know, really, like, let's be honest, and their own management has called them out for it. Like, Benn and Seguin, when healthy, still need to be better. And so that's a big factor as well. But, you know, step one, being on the ice, right? defensively, they added a pretty significant piece in Ryan Sitter. Comes over from Minnesota after having, you know, his contract bought out. And that's a massive buyout. I mean, you're talking about buying out 4 years remaining of his contract. So he'll get paid a little bit of money from them over the next 8 years. And look, we'll talk about this more, but the fact there's one team that's hoping to God the cap continues to go up, because they're going to have a cap hit of $6.3 million next year for Sutter, and it goes up to $7.3 million in the 2 years after that. Like, that's a lot of cap hit for a guy that's not on the team. Fortunately for the organization financially, there's not a lot of dollars in terms of the contract, and I'm getting a little into the weeds here. But all that to say, I think Ryan Sutter was a pretty good add. You know, I was a little surprised on the term here when you consider they gave him four more years on his deal when he's already 36 years of age, but I think he could be a fantastic guy to pair up with Miro Heiskanen. I really think he's gotten to a point in his career where his offensive numbers aren't maybe where they used to be. You know, you talk about last season had just 19 points in 56 games. That's his lowest point total since his rookie season in 2005-2006. So obviously there's, you know, a little bit of concern there. The numbers significantly dropped off when you look at power play, but I think he could maybe fall into like the quarterback of that second group, although John Klingberg will certainly have something to say about that as well. And Klingberg will be back with Esa Lindell on the second pairing. And it looks like probably Andre Sequeira with Jani Hakapa as the third pairing, although Andreas Borgman could factor in there as well. Offensively, you know, Heiskanen had a bad year. I think it's hard to argue anything other than that. When you consider just, you know, just 27 points, he played in 55 games. So it's not like he saw a significant drop off in production, but you expect more out of the guy that's supposed to be the top player for you, especially when you just gave him an 8-year, $67.6 million contract. Like, they're clearly expecting him to step up this year. And I think Ryan Sitter can help him do that.
AJ, I like all of you said, but I think I have a big question mark around Ryan Sutter, who has been a player that I've really admired through much of his career. I think he's definitely on the back nine and maybe late in that round, too. You suggested 19 points in a full slate of games last season, despite the fact he's still a big minute eater. The production simply wasn't there. I don't think he's going to get the opportunities that you might suggest on the power play. I think it's going to be Heiskanen and Klingberg that handle that role almost exclusively. They'll go with forward in the mix on each of those units, I think, to compliment these two defensemen. In an emergency, sure, Sutter gets the nod, but he showed me that he was in decline last season, and I don't think a change of address is going to change that for me. He's number three clearly on the depth chart here, and I wouldn't overrate him in upcoming drafts. Look at the goalie situation here, AJ, and I'm a little bit baffled as to why they went ahead and they signed Braden Holtby to a two-year contract when they already had Jake Oettinger and Anton Khudobin in the mix. Oettinger put up pretty nice numbers, 11-8-7 for a .236 goals against average. Khudobin, a career backup who has played more than most backups, was in on 30 decisions, 12-11-7 with a .254 goals against average. Those are pretty good low numbers in the GAA. Holtby comes over after toiling in Vancouver with a 7-11-3 mark and a .367 goals against average. His game picked up later in the season, but he had a dreadful start, and I think he's clearly number three going forward, and I'm not really sure why they brought him in. They could have gone a lot cheaper, in my opinion. They also have Ben Bishop who on the roster still, but he's got an injured knee and a very uncertain future. I think there's red flags all over that guy. I don't know he's going to be in the mix at all going forward. What say you about the Dallas net minding?
Yeah, it is certainly a question mark there that they would bring in. You know, I was definitely surprised to see them bring in Holtby. I thought they had, you know, kind of the tandem that they wanted there. It does say a lot about what they think regarding Ben Bishop's availability, as you alluded to there, Paul. You know, is he going to be able to play at all this year? When is he going to be able to? So I think the biggest thing for me is that by signing Holtby, it just raised a lot of questions that have yet to be answered and will be hopefully during training camp here. But it was a strange decision, in my opinion. I definitely agree with you there, Paul.
All right, partner. We're at the halfway point in our look at the Central Division. Let's take a break, and we'll be back with our preview of the final four Central Division teams right here on RotoWire's podcast with Statsman and AJ.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, UNIFYD, healing.com/BlueWire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
All right, we're back. You're listening to the podcast with Statsman and AJ. AJ Scholes riding shotgun with me, Paul Bruno, your Statsman. And let's go into the Minnesota Wild Club. AJ, why don't you lead us into the forward ranks here as you see them?
Yeah, absolutely. So with Minnesota, you know, the big changes for them came on the back end, really, in the defensive side of the puck. You've got right now it looks like forward combinations that are going to be pretty much the same, sort of, if all things get worked out. You've got Jordan Greenway, Joel Eriksson Ek, and Marcus Foligno making up that second group. We're currently still projecting Kirill Kaprizov to be the second left wing, but that contract situation has yet to resolve itself, so certainly something to continue to watch there. Him with Victor Rask and Matt Zuccarello. Looks like Matthew Boldy, Ryan Hartman, and Kevin Fiala as the third pairing here. I do like the addition of Freddie Gaudreau. I thought he had a real good season with Pittsburgh last year. Comes in and he'll play with Nick Bjugstad and Nico Sturm on what'll be potentially a pretty difficult fourth line to play against. That, you know, the thing I like about that group most is that's a line that could actually play. Like a lot of times I see fourth lines and I kind of look at it and go, all right, these guys are going to be out there for 5 minutes a night just to give everybody else a little bit of rest. Like that fourth line could actually see some minutes. And I would equate them somewhat similar to the Islanders here and what they have going on in their fourth line. I'm not going to jump too early and say that they'll be, the guys of that level, but they have that potential, I think, especially Bjugstad, who's pretty big dude and can play with some physicality. So look, the question is getting Kaprizov signed. I mean, that is mission number one. I got to admit, I'm not really sure what the hangup is. Seems like you give him the money that he wants. I know, cap considerations have to be there. But yeah, that guy needs to get signed sooner rather than later. We already know he's going to miss the start of camp just because of the time frame of signing the contract and getting things squared away, but it needs to happen sooner rather than later.
Yeah, and they've got lots of cap space to get it done. They got over $12 million, according to our friends at Cap Friendly, so lots of room to get it done. But I want to spend a minute you know, you talked about the incumbents, Foligno, Zuccarello, Kaprizov, and Greenway. On the surface, that's pretty four pretty good wingers. But Greenway only had six goals last year, AJ. And a guy like Matthew Boldy is very intriguing for me. I'm going to call him my sleeper pick here on the Minnesota roster. He's a guy that's got good size. He played in the U.S. college ranks. I was waiting for you to drop the U.S. college information on our listeners because that's kind of been your bailiwick. But I'll pick up the slack here and say that he was better than a point-per-game guy in the U.S. programs that he was with last season, and I think he's a guy that could really challenge for a spot on the left wing and will be a guy they'll count on if Kaprizov winds up holding out for any length of time. In the meantime, he's no worse than a third on the depth chart there, so well-positioned to move up from that rank. I also keep an eye on Kevin Fiala. Third-line right wing is where he's penciled in. Marcus Foligno is listed as first line despite only 26 points. I think you can almost flip those guys at some point, maybe early in the season, if they want to get more offense out of the top six. That would be the move that I would make. I've been a fan, like you, of Nick Bjugstad for a while. That's pretty good insurance, along with Gaudreau on the fourth line. So some pretty good depth on the Minnesota forward lines, I'll say, from top to bottom. In terms of the defense pairings, this is what the team has been known for in the past. They kind of took a bit of a hit with losing one of their top four guys in all the offseason moves this season, but they still have some guys that are considerable in terms of interest, in terms of what they might do offensively going forward. I think there's four guys you can point to, and they are Jonas Brodin, Matt Dumba, Alex Galagoski, and Jared Spurgeon, all in the low to mid-20s last year in point totals. But I think they can all, in a full season, I can make a case for all these guys hitting about 40, 45, depending on who gets the power play time. Right now, to me, it looks like Dumba and Spurgeon get those roles going forward, but Galagoski and Brodin have had their chances as well in that regard. So I'd rank Dumba 1, Spurgeon 2, Galagoski 3, and Brodin 4 in terms of the offensive capabilities from the back end. Beyond that, it's defensive-minded types like Jordy Benn and John Merrill and Dmitry Kulikov rounding out the mix. A lot of quality on the back end, I'll say, here in Minnesota.
Yeah, absolutely. And the only thing I'll add before moving on to the goalies is I did forget, or we both forgot to mention, the departure of Zach Parise, who is also bought out at the same time as Sutter. He's going to be with the Islanders now. Change for him. But yeah, another player that's going to cost them significant cap space over the next couple of years without even being on the club. In the Nets, it'll be the same duo that we saw last year. I feel like we haven't said that much with this division, that it's been all different guys, somebody new, somebody coming in. But in Minnesota, we've got the same team of Cam Talbot and Kaapo Kähkönen. And I would expect them to continue to share the net. Now, maybe Kähkönen can take control of it this year and play himself into more opportunities. But you know, you look at it last season, Talbot had 33 starts. Kähkönen had 23. And Talbot, you know, kind of outplayed him a little bit. Not significantly. I mean, we're talking 915 save percentage versus 902, 2.63 versus 2.88 in the goals against average. So, I mean, there's stuff that obviously you would want Kähkönen to improve in his game, and I think he can. So I would not be surprised to see a relatively even, you know, borderline 50-50 split here.
Yeah, I agree with you. They'd like to see growth in Kähkönen's game. He was in contention for the Rookie of the Year, but he lost it to a teammate, which is unusual in the NHL. Nice situation for Minnesota to have. But Cam Talbot is signed for this year and next at a higher ticket, so they're counting on him to be the mentor for a while. It's a very good situation here. A veteran and a young guy who's shown, both of them showing good numbers last year, and I see no reason to expect differently. And I like you, look for almost a 50-50 split here, maybe giving Kähkönen a chance to get a few more starts on the season in total, just to see if he can develop his game and be among the better goalies in the league at the year end. Next up is the Nashville Predators, the forward lines. The top six, again, looking very familiar. Filip Forsberg, Ryan Johansson, Eli Tolvanen, that top unit, Michael Granlund, Matt Duchene, and Luke Kunin. on the second line. Look, the troubles here began with the big contracts that the two centermen signed. They haven't, neither one has lived up to it. I mean, look at the point totals, 22 for Johansson and 13 for Duchesne. Duchesne was even moved to the wing with late in the season last year, and that's where he enjoyed most of his success, most of the 13 points he achieved. So some question marks down the middle of the ice, certainly, but some quality on the wings. I'm particularly fond of Forsberg and Granlund on the left side, more than Tolvanen and Kunin on the right. There's room for improvement in both of those guys. None of the guys on the left side or should be, the two guys on the left side should be guys that hit the 50 plus point mark. Yeah, I don't think I can say the same for any of the other forwards in this mix, and certainly the depth chart doesn't help them much. I think there's hope for Cody Glass to take a step. He was a top prospect in junior but hasn't lived up to that billing, and struggled with trying to make the grade in his first stop in Vegas, and maybe he gets more of a chance in Nashville. That could be a sleeper pick in this circumstance, but beyond that, it's a lot of holdovers in the wings. Yakov Trenin, Colton Sissons, Matthew Oliver, and Rocco Grimaldi. None of these guys will threaten for top 6 minutes. So for me, it's Cody Glass pushing for more of a role, and maybe Philip Tomasino, who had 32 points in 29 AHL games, also maybe pushing a guy like Tolvanen or even Kunin.
Yeah, I mean, there's really not a ton to add there, Paul. I mean, I agree with the players that you outlined that could take on bigger roles. Tomasino is one that I've kept an eye on for a while, obviously with Nashville's affiliate being here in Wisconsin. So he's definitely a player that I'm familiar with and keep an eye on. And I think part of that is the fact that, you know, that right wing is kind of open for somebody to take a hold of it. I mean, Luke Kunin is, you know, traditionally or naturally more of a center. Eli Tolvanen, you know, could move to the left as well as the right. So I think there's spots where they could get Tomasino into more opportunities, depending on what they need. Defensively, a few changes here, to say the least. It'll be Roman Josi with Philippe Myers as the top pairing. He joins as part of the Nolan Patrick, Ryan Ellis trade that did include Cody Glass, as these clubs kind of Philadelphia, Nashville, and Vegas kind of jumbled together of what they can do. I think Philippe Myers is a young prospect that has some offensive upside. He hasn't really gotten a chance to show it at the NHL level yet, and I think this is a opportunity for him to do that. You've got Matthias Ekholm and Alexander Carrier as the second pairing. Carrier, another guy that I think could be in the mix for more opportunities. He's only played like 24 games at this point at the NHL level, so I think more chances, more opportunities, he could step into a bigger role. And then Mark Borowicki and Dante Fabro to round out the pairings here. I like this group, maybe not as much as, you know, as you would have in the past when you've got Roman Josi in there. But I do think this is a solid group, and I don't think it'll be a huge drop off. I think Nashville will still be known for their defenders here.
Yeah, no question. And I can see Josi climbing back above the 50-point mark to be the big guy in terms of points on the back end. Should be one of the top defensemen picked. Still, Philip Myers, a veteran guy to complement him, not known for offense, but might be a good defensive insulation for him. And one of the best contracts in the league still in terms of the value that he gives is Matthias Ekholm, a big minute eater on the back end, and possibly the number two guy in terms of power play minutes in this whole group. I think he will easily top the 23 points that he collected last season. Dante Fabro is a guy, I used to be high on this guy as an offensively skilled player, but only getting 12 points and one goal last season, that ship has sailed for me. So it's Ekholm and Josi, and maybe Carrier is the third guy that I think you can look at for some offense. If Carrier and Ekholm develop a kinship, I think that could be a very effective second pairing. Which takes us now to the goalie tandem, AJ. UC Saros the incumbent, 21-11-1. He'll be the lead dog now. Pekka Rinne retiring. The goals against average for Saros in those 33 decisions was 2.28. That's going to be tough to repeat, but he's got a pretty solid defensive complement in front of him in the way they play this game. He'll be backed by David Rittich, who, big save Dave, moves on to Nashville after a short stint in Toronto. 5.8-2 was the record overall with his two clubs, Toronto and Calgary, last season. A 2.86 goals against average. I think they're going to be counting on Saros to really play a lot of the games here, AJ. Could be around 55 games, maybe 27 left for Rittich. I see almost a 2-1 ratio here going forward. Do you agree or disagree kind of with that assessment?
Yeah, absolutely, Paul. That was my takeaway as well, that UC Saros would be allowed to really step in and be the guy, right? You know, so I agree. I think he could be up there as one of the top, maybe top players in the league. In terms of games played, and yeah, we'll see what happens and what's left over for Dave Rittich. But yeah, it'll absolutely be the UC Saros show in Nashville. In St. Louis, there's still some unsettledness, if you will, around their top player, and that's a question mark that continues to linger over them. But for now, we've got to look at it the way that it's set, and that's Zach Sanford, Ryan O'Reilly, and Vladimir Tarasenko as that top group. Tarasenko obviously has dealt with these continuing shoulder injuries, was exposed in the expansion draft, and has reportedly expressed interest in not staying around in St. Louis. You know, it sounds like he basically feels like they mishandled all the shoulder issues that he's had. So it's a big question mark. And I think it's a little bit telling that they we found out last week that they're going to bring in James Neal and Michael Frolik on professional tryouts. I think both of those guys, if there's a spot available, I'm not saying they'll replace the, you know, the level of offense that Tarasenko can give you, but I do think it is a little bit telling that they've got these guys coming in to play a role. In addition to that, they brought in two guys really to reshape that second line, and that's Brandon Saad on the left, Pavel Buchnevich on the right, and then Braden Schenn will continue to anchor that group. I like that line a lot. I mean, Saad, for his part, 24 points last year. Buchnevich had 48. And I think they really give this club a very good top six, again, with Tarasenko in the mix there. From there, you know, some of the younger guys that we've seen for a while around here and a combination of veterans, again, guys that have been around for a while, though, basically I think are interchangeable, this third and fourth line. Klim Klosin, Robert Thomas, Jordan Kyrou, David Perron, Oscar Sundqvist, Ivan Barbashev, all kind of similar pieces in a lot of ways, you know, and I think could be shuffled around in terms of who goes where.
You know what? This is, I think, the third team in our first two previews, AJ, that features a big-ticket guy who's got a lot of question marks around him. Tarasenko signed for the next couple of seasons. Let's be clear about that. This is a holdout that basically he's putting a gun to the team's head, that move me. I don't want to be here. And that's quite a statement to say at training camp. It's got to be not something of a distraction that the team really didn't want to get to, but he's such an important player to their overall structure if his head is on straight. And if it's not, it's going to be a huge anvil for this team as long as he's there with that attitude. So a real big question mark, and one that people who are looking at the draft should really consider shying away from him, at least in the early rounds. Maybe take a flyer if things get sorted out between now and whenever your drafts come up. But boy, oh boy, I turned a sideways glance at a guy like Tarasenko, just like I did with Evander Kane in our first preview show. That said, Ryan O'Reilly is going to be tasked with carrying the mail on the top line. One of the better playmakers in hockey, has become more of a scorer, goal scorer in the last couple of years. So his profile is in place. He's got another year on the calendar, as we all do, a year later. But he seems like he's ready to do what he always does, and that's a plug-and-play kind of effort with him. Zach Sanford, fortunate to play on his wing. I think he's a guy that could be a sleeper that sees a big spike in his scoring totals. He only got 16 points last year. I could see him doing more than double that as long as he holds on to a top six role. A couple of guys that will threaten that are on the second unit flanking Braden Schenn, who is penciled in as the number two center here. And that's Pavel Buchnevich on the right side and Brandon Saad on the left side. If they stay together with that group, that's going to be a formidable second unit in St. Louis. And a guy who could move up if one of those guys gets hurt or Tarasenko is gone, could be Robert Thomas. Right now, he's penciled in as the middle guy, the centerman on the third unit. And Jordan Kyrou, a guy who had 35 points last year, is another guy who can move up and down in the roster. They also have David Perron, who had 58 points to lead this squad. And the wonder is probably it's his job to lose if Tarasenko is out of the picture. He'll move into the top position on the right wing. So they have lots of things to think about in the run-up to the opening night, and signing veteran Tyler Bozak, another insurance move as well, in addition to the PTOs that you mentioned, AJ. So a wealth of options. It's just a matter of how it's going to shake out, and we'll have more to say about the St. Louis club probably on the first show of our regular season when they do sort out the positions that are all up for grabs right now.
Yeah, in terms of defense, I guess I'll lead us in. Paul, I thought miscommunication there. Thought you were going to take us into the D, but I'll grab it. So you've got Torrey Krug and Justin Falk as the top pair here. Marco Scandella, Colton Pareko as the number two. Nico Mikola and Robert Bertuzzo as the third. Couple other guys that maybe could get a taste here. Callie Rosen, Steve Santini. But for me, the biggest question here is who's going to be the guy that steps into Vince Dunn's spot after he was claimed in the expansion draft. You're talking about the guy that had the third most points among defensemen for them last year, actually was second on the team in power play points. So that's another big factor. And I'm not sure looking at this, I don't think it's Pareko necessarily. Maybe one of the younger guys like Mikola, or maybe Jake Wallman. There are some guys that maybe have shown a little bit of something, but right now, to me, I think this defensive group is worse, to be blunt about it. They've still got two top guys in Torrey Krug and Justin Falk who can produce, but they're missing that third one. And so for me, it's a little bit weaker group. Paul, I don't know if you see it differently at all.
I do actually agree with you, AJ. They spend a lot of money on the top three guys on the back end. They're all at $6.5 million, and all of them are at least in the middle of their careers. When you look at the age of Falk at 29, Krug at 30, and Pareko at 28, Pareko signed for $6.5 million after compiling only 12 points in the 33 games that he played last season. The guy's got all the tools. And so maybe they're paying, expecting for the offense to kick in more than it has, but it hasn't to date for this guy. And he's been something a bit of a quandary for me throughout his career because he hasn't put together that 50 to 60 point season that I had forecast for him much earlier than this offseason. So some question marks on the back end. Of course, they chose Falk over Pietrangelo, and we all know how that worked out. Pietrangelo went on to fit in very nicely in Las Vegas. And Falk kind of was coming off a bad season in his first go-round with St. Louis. So there's been some Spocky and eyes focused on him. Krug, coming over from Boston, had a nice profile, but he's been injury-prone too. So there's question marks there in terms of the big-ticket guys that they've got on the roster. Scandella, Bertuzzo, there, and Santini, these guys are all veterans, but more noted for defensive side of the puck. So they're going to count on the trio that they spent big money on to deliver the goods. And the jury's out for me in terms of which one of these guys will step up. I suppose if I had to bet on a guy right now, it'd be Torrey Krug. Krug, if he stays healthy, he could get 50 points, but that's a big if right now. So go ahead with the goalies, AJ. Let us know.
Sounds good, Paul. Yes. I'll take that group. It's it's nothing new here, so we can touch on it rather quickly. It's Jordan Binnington and Ville Husso. This has been the group that Binnington obviously has been there a little bit longer in terms of at the NHL level. But this is the group that they went with last year and should continue to for a little while here. I think the big thing for them is Binnington needs to be better. I don't think there's any question there when you look at, you know, first real season came in late in the season, 24 wins in 32 games, 1.89 goals against average. I don't think anybody was expecting him to maintain that across the rest of his career. I thought his numbers in 1920 were decent, 30 wins, 13 losses, 2.56. I think that's where they would have wanted him to be. And really the bigger problem with last season was the win-loss column, which of course you can't entirely put on the netminder. But, you know, 18 wins in 42 games is not good enough. And we did see the goals against average creep up and the save percentage creep down there. So I want him to be better, but overall I think he should still see the bulk of the workload with Billy Husso as kind of the secondary guy there.
Yeah, you mentioned Binnington was involved in 40 of the 56 decisions. That probably translates into about close to 60 decisions this year. That's the kind of workload that I think he should expect. And he'll be hard-pressed to keep the goals against down because of the question marks that I raised and you raised on the defense. So there are some question marks around his expectation. He should still be one of the top six or seven goalies picked, in my estimation, still that good. And particularly when you're looking ahead to the Olympics, he's on the short list to be one of the goalies in that mix. So his pedigree is there. He's shown it very early in his career. And I expect a bit of a bounce back from the overall numbers if it's just a question of his head and talent coming to the fore together as they did in years prior. Final team that we're going to look at is the only Canadian content in this group, and that's the Winnipeg Jets. They didn't really do much to alter their mix in up front. The injury note of note is Brian Little has a head injury that caused him to miss all of last season. There's still no timetable for him to return. And Riley Nash is the only significant upgrade offensively, but even he will be hard-pressed to crack the top nine. And here's how that shapes up. A familiar look in the top two pairings, top two lines that will not be upset at all in training camp. This is how it's going to go down opening night. Kyle Connor and Mark Scheifele and Blake Wheeler on the top unit. Each of these guys, signature players for this club, and I think each of them should top the 60-point mark. Scheifele, for my money, should be better than a point-per-game player here, and maybe Wheeler even threatens that plateau as well. This unit is that good. They're one of the best forward lines in hockey. Behind them, they have the very exciting Nikolai Ehlers, who is a coin flip with Connor to play on that top line, and you keep an eye on that every night that they play. You'll do that by looking at the RotoWire depth charts that AJ and company take a good look at every day for us. And but he's got no slouch in Paul Stastny, one of the better playmaking centers in the last several years as his center, and Pierre-Luc Dubois, who is hopeful of trying to fit in better than he did last year. We pencil them in on the right side, but I think you could see those guys flip-flopping at center, maybe they even go three deep and let Pierre-Luc Dubois center a third unit. And the choices from the third group are including Christian Vesalainen, Adam Lowry, and Jansen Harkins. Of course, they lost Mason Appleton in that mix, so it remains to be seen how that really shakes out. But let's let AJ talk about the forward lines and see what he thinks about that group.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing for me is exactly what we saw last year, and I still don't like it, of having Paul Stastny and Pierre-Luc Dubois on the same line. Like, these are centers. Put them at center. Like, I would almost rather they move, as much as it would, you know, as much as it hasn't always worked to break up Scheifele and Wheeler, like, I'd almost rather move Scheifele to the wing on one of these lines and keep Pierre-Luc Dubois and Paul Stastny as the 1-2 centers. I just don't like either one of these guys playing wing. Hopefully though, if they go into the season with that expectation, they, you know, maybe it kind of changes everything. The problem for them is they don't really have anybody that can step up, right? Like, this is a top six heavy group. Adam Lowry, you know, 24 points last year, very good player. But he's not a winger, so he's not really, in my opinion, an option. They need a Vesalainen, a Harkins, a Dominic Tenato, one of these guys to step up and be able to move into one of those roles. Because I just hate, honestly, seeing Dubois and Stastny playing out of position. It didn't work after that trade, and I don't expect it to work heading into this season either. Defensively, some shuffling around here. They got Brendan Dillon, who comes in on a trade for some second round picks to play potentially in the top pairing with Neil Pionk. I think that's a great signing for them to get somebody that can stabilize that, and it'll allow them to break up Morrissey and Pionk so that Morrissey can maybe jump up into the play a little bit more, get back to being a 30-point producer that he was in the two prior seasons. And then they also added Nate Schmidt. Again, another guy who can come in and be a factor here, had some really good years in Winnipeg, or I'm sorry, in Vegas, right, that he was a 30-point guy. And again, it'll be kind of a question. You know, I think the only certainty is that Neil Pionk is going to quarterback the number one power play unit. That would be the only thing I would say for sure here. You know, obviously Morrissey has done it, but I do think Nate Schmidt could be in contention for that as well. And then from there, you know, there's any number of guys that could fill in. I think in third pairing, Dylan DeMello is maybe the one mainstay. And then there's, you know, Logan Stanley, Ville Heinola, Sammy Niku, like any one of those guys could kind of come in and be in that third pairing there. But I like the additions. You know, we've talked about Winnipeg's defense being a question mark the last couple of years. Did they bring in another stud star power player? Certainly not. But I do think Schmidt and Brendan Dillon were quality additions to this back line.
Yeah, I like the way you finished that off, because for a couple of years now, we've been talking disparagingly about the defensive depth in Winnipeg, but they've done a nice job reshaping it. I think they've got a very credible power play quarterback in Neil Pionk, who registered 32 points last year. I think he could get up to 50 in a full season of 82 games if he's healthy. And Josh Morrissey is probably plan B in that regard, and Nate Schmidt might be C. But for me, I'd consider Logan Stanley and take a flyer on him. He's got tremendous size and skill, and he only got 4 points last year in a depth role. But if he can find a way to get more minutes in high leverage situations, I wonder what he would deliver. So I'm keeping a bit of an opening in some of my leagues late in the season long drafts to see if I can snag him and maybe be rewarded for that kind of a sleeper pick. Which takes us down to the goalie tandem here, AJ, and it's Connor Hellebuyck going to carry the mail. And if you and I had to bet on which goalie was going to play the most games in an NHL season this season among the goalies, I think he'd be at the top of both of our lists. He got 44 decisions last year. The goals against was 258. He's been a workhorse every year of his career, and he's backed up by Eric Comrie, who's been a backup every year in his career. Comrie only had one decision last year in his record, one game, 3 goals against average, so not much to tell there other than he's been around in the backup roles for years. But it's Connor Hellebuyck or bust, isn't it, here?
Oh, absolutely. And to your point, Paul, if there's any player, and it'll never happen, let me be clear about that, it's never going to happen, but if there's one player who could challenge for Marty Brodeur's 78 games played in a season, it's absolutely Connor Hellebuyck. Like, he's the one guy that I think is crazy enough to try and do it. Like, I don't even think Andrei Vasilevskiy would go that far, although he figures to be in the top. But, you know, we're never going to see that again in today's NHL, where a guy plays, you know, and there's so many seasons Marty Baron played over 70 games. Like, it's just ridiculous, and we'll never see that again. But Connor Hellebuyck will see the bulk of the starts, and it really makes whoever's the number two, like, kind of irrelevant. You'll see him a handful of times. It'll probably be Eric Comrie, although I think Mikael Berdan could make a run at it during training camp. But yeah, it's Hellebuyck or bust for them, as it has been for a number of seasons.
All right, partner, it's time to put your predictions on the table for this division, the Central Division. What do you see top to bottom, pal?
Well, look, you know, for me, the biggest thing is I look at a team, I kind of see what they did the year before. And did they do anything to get better, or have they lost pieces and gotten worse? And when we were going through the show, I think the one team that addressed boom, 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 some of their biggest needs is the Chicago Blackhawks. And I really like their forward depth. You know, maybe they could be a little deeper in terms of the blue liners, but they have Seth Jones, they have some up and coming youngsters do that can factor in, and then they have the best goalie in hockey. No argument there from anybody, I'm sure. So for me, the Chicago Blackhawks are the team that I'm going to pick to win this division. I know that's saying a lot for where they've been in the last couple of years, but they've really improved and addressed a lot of their needs. And for me, Colorado then comes in as number two. They have the all-stars at the top that will keep them in this thing. But at the end of the day, they got worse, I think, is what I will say with the goaltending situation. I've got Winnipeg slotted in at three, again, on the heels of the net mining, and they've got some talent up top. Minnesota comes in at number four for me. I don't know if you had asked me a couple weeks ago, just off the cuff, if I would have landed there. I don't think I would have, but I do like their blue line, and all of that is contingent on Kirill Kaprizov being back, because if he's not, this team is not going to make the playoffs, which is where I have them penciled in. I've bet on Dallas too many times to be high on them with this group of guys. Injuries just seem to always plague them. The goaltending situation is a huge question mark for me. St. Louis, same thing. There's so many question marks around their best player on the team. Is Tarasenko going to stay around? How do they replace Dunn? Can Jordan Binnington, again, question. And then I think Nashville and Arizona are just logical choices to round out the bottom of this group. It's going to be tough for Nashville to do anything against the talent pool that's here. And Arizona continues to be a dumpster fire that somehow has to rebuild every couple of years despite having no success. Usually you do good, you struggle with cap and other things, and then you have to rebuild. Arizona seems to have to rebuild every 4 or 5 years without actually doing anything.
Well, partner, looking at our list, there's a couple of differences. Nothing as significant as the one that we covered in our Pacific Outlook, but at the top of this division, I've got to go with Colorado. The Avalanche was the top team. They won the President's Trophy last year, and I think they're being in contention again for it this year. The key, of course, is can Darcy Kuemper hold up his end of the bargain? I'm voting yes, and I think he's going to be one of the busiest and most productive goalies in hockey. I know you don't hold that same opinion, and that's the reason why you have Colorado second. I'm going to go with Dallas in second place. They managed to be a middle-of-the-pack team in their division last year with the absence of most of their first line for most of the year. I'm expecting healthier outcomes for a couple of guys on their forward line. Sagan, particularly, if he's healthy, that's a signature player for this team. And I think they'll have enough, and they got experience in the nets. I don't know who's going to take the reins but out of the three, but I think they've got good options there. They got nice depth on defense, and they got a lot of young forwards too. So I like that team a lot. I think they're going to put it all together and challenge Colorado for the top spot, but I think they'll finish second. I, like you, am high on Chicago as well for all the reasons that you suggested. They've addressed everything, something at each of the main positions, and so that means they have an upward tick for me, and I'm putting them in third place, a playoff spot. And I think Winnipeg's going to hold off St. Louis for a second wild card in this conference. I think so highly of Connor Hellebuyck. They've got a six-pack up front that is the rival of any team in the league, I think, and they've got an emerging defense that is no longer a black hole that we just covered off. So all that put together makes me think that they're also in line for playoff spot. The team that takes the biggest drop from last year is the St. Louis Blues. The question marks begin with the issue with Tarasenko and the aging blue line. They're not over the hill by any means, but I think there's more of a concern than there was in the past for me, and that's central to why I think they're going to be on the outside looking in. Minnesota, also a team that's on the outside looking in. I just don't think there's enough there at some of the positions that are of importance. And Nashville and Arizona, I've got them bringing up the rear as you do. I think Arizona could be in contention for the worst team in the NHL this season. So, AJ, that's the way we see it. Pretty interesting that we have a lot of similarity, but some interesting food for thought during the course of the season when we look back at this and see how we're measuring up against one another. There's enough differences to keep that interesting. Any final thoughts for you on this division?
No, I think this is this is definitely going to be a tighter division than the Pacific that we previously covered. I think there's a lot of teams that, a couple things go this way, that way, could move up or down in this group. So I don't think it's quite as stark as what we saw when we went through the Pacific.
Well, I know you got to be excited because the next division that's up is the Metropolitan Group, and that's going to be where you get to wax poetic about your favorite club and some of their arch rivals. And so we'll wrap up this look around the Central Division. You're listening to Puckcast with Statsman and AJ. It's RotoWire's signature fantasy hockey podcast, and we will remind you, please remember to send your comments or questions on Twitter. Follow me, Paul Bruno, at Statsman22, and you can follow AJ at AJSchultz24. As always, we invite you to listen in to Puckcast to get our tips to stay ahead of the competition in your fantasy hockey planning and research. So long, everybody.